Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between, and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to episode 68 of Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Ms. Poya Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
And as I said, it is episode 68. Episode 67 was flying off the shelves, you guys. John Edwards was a very popular guest for us.
Come on, Mr. Cleo.
So, Mr. Cleo. We had over 1,500 listens this weekend alone.
Sickening.
From Friday through Monday. So thank you guys from around the world for listening in to our John Edwards interview. And guess what, you guys? We have the second half of our John Edwards interview in this episode. So later this hour, we will have with us John Edwards talking about his career as a psychic and medium. With actually, this episode, he's going to be talking about his celebrity clientele a little bit.
Oh, cute.
So, yeah, and of course, we are also going to be checking in with singer and actress Krista Bell, who is one of the stars of the new reboot of Twin Peaks on Showtime. So she will be later this episode, too, episode as well. Other than that, how did you spend your Memorial Day weekend, Pearl?
I got tattooed.
Come on, tattoos.
And then I performed over at the Castro Theater. I opened with Malay for the Drag Queens of Comedy.
Very nice.
And then hung out with my real friends.
Oh my god.
and then I just had a nice relaxing weekend. It was wonderful.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So I had yesterday I hosted my Memorial Day recovery party at Lookout, and that was super fun. It was packed. DJ Phil B was the DJ. Look, Pearl, look what he gave me.
What did he give you? Oh, he gave you the flowers?
He gave me a dozen roses, you guys.
I haven't seen Phil B in a very long time.
Me either. This was the first time I've seen Phil in literally probably 6 months or more. But
it's probably been since I've been with, like, House of Pride.
Wow.
That I've seen him.
And, girl, I know that there was a little bit before you left House of Pride that you must have seen him. Because
right.
He was
at that time.
He was a little over it over there.
Right.
So, but every time I work with DJ Phil B, he gives me flowers to let me know I'm appreciated and loved. And he gave me a dozen red roses, you guys.
Well, shout out to Phil B. He's always giving gifts. I got, he actually got me a Spice Girl doll.
I know. And he gave me the come in, we're cunts sign that's above my TV in my menagerie of gifts from people who love me.
How appropriate.
Well, yes. How appropriate.
So shout out to you, Phil B.
Yes, DJ Phil B. And that's how I spent my Memorial Day weekend. I actually spent also...
Yeah, you had Glamazon off.
I had the Glamazon off. And... Okay, so... No, I'm not gonna spill that on the air.
Girl, spill it!
I'll spill it to you
Come
privately,
on.
But I'm not gonna spill it on the air.
There's
information that I'm withholding from you guys. It's true, but...
What's it about?
Well, I'll talk to you off the air, Pearl. So... But I did spend Saturday pretty much all day with my BFF, Shigellarella, over in Berkeley. We met up in Berkeley and we spent the afternoon there. And then we came back over here and hung out for a little while, which was nice because I don't get to see her very often. Yeah, it was super nice to see her and whatnot. And I'm trying to think what else has been going on. There's not been a lot going on. I think it was just a busy holiday weekend and I did catch up on some sleep. I was, like, really exhausted, too, so... Yeah.
When are you not sleeping?
Girl, that's a good question. I sleep a lot, bitch. I do sleep a lot. I love sleep, bitch. It's true. I love it.
Anyway.
I guess so. So, guess what, you guys? We are not recording on it right now, but we do have, thanks to Regina Gorge, our new and revamped computer. I did take the computer last week to get a full overhaul, so it is gorgeous. It's Regina Gorgeous. And it's fully brought up to date. But Pearl was like, why aren't we recording on it today? And I had to break the news to her that I'm actually planning on moving all the information from this computer over to the other computer and probably saving this one to do our recordings on. I don't think that the problem with this computer in terms of recording is that it's old. I just think it's overflowing with, like, all the memories used up on it.
Well, I guess, girl, we'll find out one way or another.
We will. So this good old baby is perfectly fine for this. I actually haven't even used the other one. I logged onto it and went, tried to go onto the internet with it, and it did that fine, but I haven't done anything with it since then. We'll have to get that one up and running. And, this weekend, you guys, upcoming on June 3rd, I believe it is. Let's double check the dates. Yes, on June 3rd, we have donated a Swiss Navy Lube prize package to a fundraising event being hosted by my daughter, Intensive Claire, for the Castro Country Club. There's going to be some kind of a garden party and auction. Girl, I don't understand it. Like, okay. Pearl's sitting here blankly, like, whatever. But Intensive Claire will be hosting a garden party auction on Saturday, raising funds for the Castro Country Club at the Castro Country Club. So pop in there and bid on a Swiss Navy Lube prize package donated by us here at Party Foul Radio.
All right, they better give us a shout out over there.
We, of course, they will. And Claire said that she's going to have people bidding by kazoo and Richard Simmons hand cards or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, whatever. Claire's quite a weird one. I love you, Claire, but you're a weirdo.
Well, I mean, she's your daughter, so.
I know, right? Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think what otherwise has been going on for us. I will return next week to the Google campus. I did not teach on Monday because it was Memorial Day, but I'm sending them off an email with all of their homework for this week, for this weekend. They're going to have to learn to cover their brows so they can come into next week's class knowing how to cover their brows. That's their homework for this week. And then we will begin working with makeup next week.
It's one of the toughest parts.
So, and I actually got an email.
Which technique are you teaching them to cover their brows?
Glue stick.
Okay.
Elmer's glue stick, girl. I'm going to teach them Elmer's glue stick because my experience is, you guys, there's many ways to cover your brows. Of course, you can use spirit gum and wax, which is what I did for the first number of years that I did drag. But I also find that spirit gum and wax is much more difficult to take off than it is to just take off water-soluble glue. So as long as, you know, for learning's sake, we are going to go with that. Oh, okay. I will also tell you guys, this is upcoming for next episode, episode 69. We are going to have a gentleman named Stan Zimmerman on with us. Stan got his career writing for the Golden Girls. Then he went on to write for the Gilmore Girls for a number of years. And now he is producing, directing, and writing a series on Tellofilms.com. That's TELLOFILMS.com. You might remember Tellofilms from when we had Lonnie Anderson on, and she was talking to us a little bit about a series that she's doing for Tellofilms. Tellofilms is an online site that provides original scripted content for the lesbian community.
All right.
So Stan Zimmerman and his writing partner, Jim Berg, are writing a new series called Sex and Execs. That's S-E-C-S, like secretaries and executives. Sex and Execs for Tellofilms. And it's got, it stars Olivia Dabo, who was on The Wonder Years for a number of years. And Sandra Bernhardt is a regular on the show, too. So I'm actually trying to get Olivia Dabo and Sandra Bernhardt on with us in the upcoming episodes, but it's going to be a fun conversation with Stan Zimmerman about not only Sex and Execs, but some other projects that he's got upcoming. And I'm going to give you a hint. One of them is called Silver Foxes, and it's very similar in format to The Golden Girls, except it's for aging gay men.
Oh, cute.
Yeah. So we're going to talk to him about that and much more. It's going to be on next episode, which will be 69. Oh, you guys, I got some, hold on, I'm gonna pour Pearl and myself a cup of tea, because I've got some tea boiling. Hold, please.
Oh, that means there must be some Lipton, girl.
There's some... You see the Lipton over there, bitch? Yes, girl. Oh, no, you meant the
some scoop.
Yeah.
Girl.
Okay, well.
Anyway.
Hold on, we'll be back,
she's
bitch.
She's old, girl.
I really thought she meant tea. All right, you guys, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. We now have our cups of tea. Pearl's drinking out of a a cup that was actually given to me by
she
Aisha.
She goes so she could name drop, bitch.
By Aisha Tyler. Didn't we have Aisha Tyler on the podcast, though?
No.
Oh, I thought we did, y'all.
That'd be lovely.
So I interviewed her a couple years ago, and she gave me a coffee mug that says The Talk on it, and Pearl's drinking out of it right now. So anyway, while we paused the thing, I gave Pearl the... I spilled the tea about to Pearl, but I'm not ready to spill it to you guys yet. We'll hold off until maybe next week. We'll probably give it to you next week.
Yep.
So, but it was full of shade. Let me just tell you that.
Shady Queens, girl.
So, it is what it is, you guys.
It is what it is. Me and my best friend tell each other that all the time.
Well, that's all, I mean, sometimes that's literally all you can say about certain things. You know what? It is what it is, or that person is who they are. You just have to, like, accept different people in different places, whatever. You know, it's got to be what it's got to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's that.
Oh, anyway, girl, I need to snap out of it.
What is wrong with you, bitch?
I'm just thinking about, like, stuff.
Oh, was it that what I told you?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I was... You got so, without going into too much detail, you guys, it's a scenario like this. I got a call from a person who'd heard from a person...
Who heard from a person.
Person. Something. I heard it from a friend who... Heard it from a friend. Heard it from another. You've been messing around. But the fact is, I already knew what she was telling me. It's just the fact that there's like a whole series of people who now know information that they do not think I know, and they're hiding it from me. That's shady, ladies.
Shady.
And so it's like, you know, it's one of those things where finally, so that they told enough people that somebody got a conscience and was like, we really should tell this. We really should have this conversation directly with the person it involves, as opposed to, you know, I think it speaks volumes about certain situations. So without giving you guys the inside scoop, we can open it up to the broader topic of the fact that quite often people, like, will talk to all kinds of people about a subject without ever actually addressing it to the person involved. And it's just like, what is the purpose of that? Like, what is the purpose of that? Fortunately, in this situation, I'm...
Not bothered.
I'm kind of not bothered. I'm disappointed. That's what happens. You trust people, and you become disappointed when you realize that they, per se, wouldn't have your back the same way that you would have theirs, or that they would not come to you with information that... It was already cashed, girl.
Oh.
She found a check that long since had been deposited in the bank electronically. So, oh, it was, by the way, guess what? It was, the check that she found was from one of our sponsors, Daddy's Barbershop. And guess what?
What?
Jeff Millard became first runner-up to International Mr. Leather this past weekend.
Come on, first runner-up. Girl, I've been there. Trust me, I've been there.
But... Girl,
that's still fabulous.
First runner-up at International Mr. Leather at IML in Chicago is a huge deal. There was like 60 or so competitors, and he was first runner-up.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations to Mr. Daddy's Barbershop / Mr. San Francisco Leather / first runner-up to International Mr. Leather, Jeff Millard, who is, of course, you guys have heard him on the podcast. He's a friend of the show. He's a friend of ours, and he is incredible. So... I'm so proud to say that he went to Chicago to represent San Francisco at IML, and he's done beautifully. So congratulations, Jeff. We are so proud of you.
Seriously, I saw some pictures with him in, I think, Miss San Francisco Leather.
Yeah, I wonder how she did.
I don't know.
So it's such a different world. Like, San Francisco, the Miz competition here in San Francisco doesn't seem as hotly contested as Mr. San Francisco Leather.
If it wasn't a charity thing, I would totally run for it.
Really?
Yeah.
She's like, I won't run for anything for charity.
Not anymore. Girl, if I'm going to give to charity, I'm going to give to charity on my own dime. I don't need a title to hide behind
I don't think a title... I don't think you hide behind a title. I think that you...
I think it's just glorifying it, and I don't need that. Like, I'm giving because I want to give, and it's out of the kindness of my own heart, not because I'm required to, because... of some system that I'm part of.
Right. I mean, I understand that. I can understand that. I feel like sometimes, like, so years ago, for example, when I persuaded my drag mother, Landa Lakes, to run for our Grand Duchess.
The court.
So this is what I said to her, because she, at the time, was the head of numerous nonprofit organizations. She was running all these small, very small. She's Native American. She was born on a Native American reservation, and she works with almost every Native American organization in the city, but specifically any that are related to the LGBT or Two-Spirit community, she definitely is involved in. And she said, I just don't have time to do this other. And I said, well, what if all of these organizations that you are running small fundraising events for here and there, we were able to harness the court to run fundraisers for this. So you would kind of be doing these fundraisers through one thing, but they would be getting the money. And Landa was like, oh, you know what? That's actually kind of more convenient than trying to organize all these different little things. And she did that highly successfully. And then when I ran for Grand Duchess, it was the same thing. And I do understand the element of feeling like it's glorified. I did all my work because I wanted to give back to the community. Like, when they did all that title-oriented stuff, it made me really uncomfortable. Yeah, I didn't mind being Grand Duchess or whatever, but when people are like, Your Majesty, I was like, oh my God, that is so awkward and uncomfortable. Yeah. And I don't really love big, gaudy crowns and stuff like that.
Wow.
Well, I know Pearl can't say that, but I don't. And, like, you're supposed to wear... The idea and mentality in the court system is, like, the bigger your crown and more important you look or whatever. And my favorite crown I've ever had was the Grand Ducal Council's Royal Crown Princess crown. And it's very small, but it's so pretty. And I remember specifically last year when I did Design Meets Divas of Drag, second runner-up won that particular crown. And I was like, I want to win second runner-up. I want that crown. I want to own that crown.
Now, this is a shade. But each and every crown I've won is beautiful, except for the crown I've won from the court system for the Queen of Hearts, girl.
Well,
but now they've flipped the script, and now they give out these pretty, really pretty crowns for it.
I don't know. I didn't have anything to do with when you won, so I wasn't heavily involved, so I don't know. But it's also, it's not like a huge pageant thing that you won. You want a crown underneath this other thing. So anyway, you guys, I know that at this point, I think our conversation is boring at this moment. So
I didn't, girl. I was highly interested, but okay.
Pearl was like, I love any talk about crowns.
You know, jewelry.
All right, you guys, we're gonna take a little quick break, and then when we come back, we're gonna recap RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah, let's do the recap, girl.
Girl, it's time for our spoiler alerts, bitches, because we're gonna recap Drag Race for you.
Yeah.
And then don't forget, later this hour, we have psychic John Edwards, as well as singer-actress Krista Bell, who will tell us all about her role on Twin Peaks, as well as her new album called We Dissolve, which comes out next week.
All right.
Oh, we'll be back.
Dissolve some of this weight, girl.
Girl, we'll be back with more Party Foul Radio right after this. Each and every week, Party Foul Radio with Poyo and Pearl is happy to be brought to you in conjunction with Daddy's Barbershop in the Castro. Visit Arlen and all the men and women of Daddy's Barbershop at 4102 19th Street in San Francisco. Tell them we sent you. All right, you guys, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm Poya Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
If you haven't watched the most recent episode of RuPaul's Drag Race...
This is where you need to fast forward.
Yes, girl, fast forward so you do not get it spoiled for you bitches. But the most recent episode was the Makeover Challenge.
I love the Makeover Challenge.
I love it every year.
I really do. I mean, I think it kind of sucks for someone to be sent home during the Makeover Challenge. But I love the Makeover Challenge.
Yeah, well, I think it would suck if they sent somebody home on the Makeover Challenge because of something that their partner doesn't do. You know what I mean? If they were like, your partner was awkward in heels and this, and that would be, like, just unfair, because there's only so much you can do with the bitch.
Right.
But
you know, I feel like that happens. Anyway.
I don't think it happened this time.
Not this time. Yeah.
No.
If anything, there was contestants that were saved by their...
Yes. Peppermint's partner's personality saved Peppermint, I think.
Yes.
At least from being in the bottom.
Right.
So, in general, what they always pair people, these girls up, with all kinds of varieties. They've had, in the past, military people. They've had Little Women. This episode, they paired them up with RuPaul's crew members.
Yes.
And it was very interesting to see the relationships between these girls and the crew members that they've been interacting with, for the most part,
the entire time
they've been there. So, one of the things I noted, Pearl, so Sasha Velour gets paired up with the associate producer of the show, who's like RuPaul's right-hand person.
Right.
And I felt like, part of me was like, okay, that's not a normal crew member. Like, he's got insight into where the show is going, what they want to do with it. I was like, I hope, you know, he wasn't guiding her too much.
Well, so, I mean.
Then again, you guys, Sasha Velour just appeared here in San Francisco, and I've heard nothing but raves about her.
Well, she's amazing. She's brilliant. She's kind of amazing. Her fashion sense is impeccable. And, you know, she's an all around fantastic, you know, entertainer.
Right. But what we heard about Valentina, for example, was not anything to do with her talent on the stage or her talents as a, you know, fashion perspective or any of that. It was about a shitty personality. And yeah. I heard Sasha Velour was incredibly nice. I was actually told by two different parties that anytime someone new came into the dressing room with her, she would actually go up to them and introduce herself and say, "Hi, I'm Sasha Velour."
That's sweet.
It is sweet, and it's also highly professional, because a lot of these girls, I think, come in with the attitude that, well, everybody wants to know me, and, like,
yeah,
you know.
I think the only intimidating queen that I've met who I've had to introduce myself to, and she didn't talk much to me, was Kenya Michaels.
Girl, she couldn't talk much to you.
Because
she doesn't know English. She didn't at that time, at least.
Yeah.
So but that was years ago, right?
That was years ago. I mean,
I don't know. The girls are all very different, but a lot of the girls will come in and they'll be, I don't think they're standoffish is the word that they would use, but I think for an outsider it could seem that they are standoffish, because they come in and they sort of get their own area of the room, and like a lot of people are afraid to go approach them or whatever. And so it's really nice when you get someone who, as apparently Sasha Velour was, who goes out of their way to make sure that those introductions get made so everybody kind of feels comfortable. Because do you remember when we did the Miss Gay California pageant and I was like, you were like, who are you? You're being too nice back here in the dressing room, whatever. Well, when I go into any strange dressing room or I'm in an environment that makes me feel uncomfortable or self-conscious or anything like that, which is any kind of time I travel or something like that and I don't know people, I feel outside my own ballpark. So I do the same thing. I will go up and introduce myself to people so that I kind of at least break the ice with, I don't know. It's like, to me, it's the same thing I would do if I went into if I was new in an office space, you know. I would go and introduce myself to my coworkers and, you know, say hello and kind of trying to figure out what the hell's going on at least. So anyway, back to the
recap, girl.
Back to the recap. So it was the makeover challenge. They get paired up with people in the crew. I was honest to God waiting for Nina to be like, they paired me up with somebody horrible on purpose, you know, because she's a victim. Victim.
But the thing is, I feel like Nina, this was the challenge that Nina should have slayed.
Really?
With how amazing she is at makeup, she should have been able to transform him into her twin sister girl.
Well, as it turns out,
that's not what happened.
They did look alike or whatever, but it was kind of mostly boring.
Bank, girl. It was kind of bank.
So, as they get paired up with the girls, or the guys, actually, they, you know, it shows them getting to know the boys and all this stuff, which was, some of that was really endearing, you know what I mean? I thought some of it was really, really nice.
Yeah, I'm assuming you didn't watch Untucked.
I did not watch Untucked.
Of course.
I have not watched one Untucked this whole season.
Yeah, I mean, they were crying during the elimination backstage, watching the girls. It was... They get pretty close to these people. Or they got pretty close to these people.
Well, they've also been there the whole season with the girls, so you know what I mean? So
yeah, but they talk about like how it's different now that they had the
paired up with...
Exactly.
So... the one thing I will say about this particular episode is that not a single set of the sisters that came down the runway wowed me. Not one.
None.
I mean, the closest ones to any kind of a wow factor for me, I think, were Sasha Velour's.
Sasha's was sickening.
I thought hers was really well done. And honestly, as much as they... dogged out Alexis Michelle, I thought hers were cute too.
Oh girl, no.
I thought they were cute. I
could have sewed whatever she made her and her partner better than she did. It was awful.
The hair
was all right, the face was kind of there, but it was terrible.
Well, the thing about what I liked about theirs was that I actually very much agreed with what Michelle said. Have we seen this sort of like space age Barbarella type thing in the past? Yes, it's done to death at every year at Halloween. But at the same time,
it wasn't even done well.
I thought it was done quite meticulously. Like, I really erred on the side of what Michelle and Kesha said, because they both said, you know, yes, it's familiar. Yes, we've seen it. It's not terribly original, but it's well done. Versus something like, I mean... Peppermint, if it had not been for the personality displayed by her quote-unquote sister,
mm-hmm.
Those two outfits did not, they were so, like, clashing, I couldn't see the similarity.
Print. It was a print. They both had long arms or whatever, but...
Yeah, they were both kimono-style dresses, and that was about it. But that, and then ultimately it was Shea Coulee's. Like, she and her sister were also a mess. I did not like theirs at all. And then Nina Bonita Brown, you guys decided to...
I feel like, with Shay, I feel like it was... She only came out a mess. Like, her hair was falling all over the place. But if she would have got that together before they stepped out on the runway, I think she would have been fine, to be honest.
I just felt... They looked like two...
It was kind of prom-y.
Well, It reminded me of that thing that happens at Halloween time where, like, they go to, like, the thrift store and find two long evening gowns or whatever. Yeah. And that's what it reminded me of.
Well, his face was painted, though.
Yes, his face was painted. He looked great. His hair was falling in his face. But I just felt like there, you know, the dress or something, the dresses could have been more va-va-boom or... I loved the hair. I did not like the fact that they showed that her sister's hair was pulled up in the back and you could see her real hairline and all this stuff and kept falling in her face. But the one that really got my goat of the whole crew was definitely Nina Bonita Brown's. Like, Nina...
Oh, yeah, girl. Nina wore the knockoff Beyonce Super Bowl costume that you could buy from the Halloween store down the aisle. I completely clocked that. And
I didn't clock it. It just looked like her typical knee-high boots and basically undergarments that there should be some kind of an outfit over top of, which they called her on that because they showed it, and she's been on the runway like 5 times in that same outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And I did think that one of the things that was very interesting is Nina said at one point during the episode, "My drag is my face."
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, okay, I get that, but it has to be cohesive between the face and everything from the neck down.
Yeah, exactly.
And this was the worst defense for me. When you're doing stuff that's like more avant-garde or out of the box, if you've seen it already, you know that she and her sister came out with their done up like rabbits. They came out like rabbits. Well, the key to avant-garde makeup is a fair amount of precision in the makeup, and it has to look clean. Otherwise, it looks a mess. And we were watching on a really large HD TV. And I'm convinced I would have seen it even if I was watching on my iPhone. The makeup looked really rough.
It looked rushed, too.
Like, really, really rough. And that's why I was telling my friends, I was like, if this bitch tries to do some elaborate makeup, knowing that she's got to paint herself and another person, and they have a set amount of time, she's crazy. Like, this is the challenge where you give your sister a beautiful smoky eye and, like, get her done up with something that's real fucking quick so you guys can come out looking the same and you don't have to rush your makeup. But, girl, now is not the time to try to do some shit that's off the wall or whatever. Because,
and if she didn't, I think she would have stayed.
Well, ultimately, you guys, the bottom two comes down to Shea Coulee and Nina Bonina Brown.
Right.
And so they lip sync. Once again, I thought the lip sync was boring as shit, kind of.
Nina kind of gave up at this point.
Nina was like, barely looked alive.
I don't even think she moved out of her spot.
And I thought Shay was a better lip performer than that. I'm sure that there's something more going on there. Maybe it was just because she had that damn evening gown.
Yeah. But she performed still.
So,
a little bit.
Anyway, ultimately it comes down to Shea Coulee, Shantae, she stays, and Nina Bonina Brown sashays away.
Yep.
And I really felt that the critiques were mostly really spot on. You know, I don't think the judges were highly impressed by any of the shit that they saw this episode. And at one point they actually, I think it was Michelle, said that she looked like low budget cosplay. And I was like, oh God, awkward. And I thought actually she said she doesn't even live up to cosplay, because cosplay is recreation of costuming and whatever from head to toe. And Nina Bonina Brown is only doing her face, so she's got a ways to go if she's gonna, like, get to cosplay level.
Yeah, I mean, she did.
Those cosplay girls don't fucking play around.
Yeah. Well, we're down to the top five, and...
Yeah, the top five is...
I really think top three is going to be Trinity, Shay, and Sasha.
Sasha, I agree with you. I agree. At this point, we are in agreement on who the top three is gonna be. After the shocking elimination of Valentina, I think it really kind of made it a little more visible who the top three were going to be.
Yeah, Trinity won the challenge. And I think that makes her the single person who's won the most challenges in Drag Race history.
Really?
I think so.
Wow.
Yeah.
So.
Well deserved, too. You go, girl.
So Trinity is doing very well. I think that we're going to see Sasha Velour and Shea Coulee go into the top three. We'll find out soon. We're down, you know, two more weeks of eliminations, and then we're at the top three. They'll be eating their Tic Tac with Mama Ru.
Yep. Then they shoot the music video.
They shoot a music video, and then you guys...
Finale.
The finale, bitch. But it'll be interesting. You know, I'm wondering if... Because there hasn't been a ton of drama... You know.
There has, girl. You just haven't been watching Untucked.
The Untucked. Well, I mean, I think that I felt really like one of the things that was very valid, and of course, needless to say, Shay said it, and then there she is in the, you know, lip sync for your life with Miss Thing. She basically said, you know, we're all sitting here trying to cheer Nina on, but after a while, bitch, you're on your own. We got our own things to worry about.
Right.
I can't be spending all my energy trying to cheer you up.
Right. This isn't group counseling, girl.
Yeah, this ain't group therapy, bitch. And I hope that with her earnings after Drag Race has started filming and everything like that, that Nina Bonina Bonina Brown goes and gets herself a good therapist. Bitch, you need to work through some issues, hunty.
Right.
My interest in seeing what she was going to bring to the runway had died off a while ago, and her attitude had killed most of my enthusiasm for her. The other thing I will say is that as creative as I think she is on some levels, you know how people talk about, like, oh, so-and-so wears the same silhouette down the runway. Like, you know, they'll wear the same style of dress over and over. So her drag is her face, but she does the same silhouette. She did those same, like, cheekbone things and chin thing. She just painted something different on top of it every time. Like, if you're going to really switch it up, bitch, switch it up.
Well, she did with that apricot thing.
When she was a peach, you mean? Whatever. The Georgia peach?
Yeah.
Yeah, the peach was good. The peach was also, like, week number one. So. And
she's done a lot of cool stuff, though. And then she did the lion, and then she did the lion was amazing.
The lion looked good. That and, also was when she was in the bottom, too.
Mm-hmm.
So. Anyway, we are now to the top five, you guys. Alexis Michelle, Peppermint, Sasha Velour.
Trinity.
Trinity Taylor and Shea Coulee are our top five for season 9 of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Do you have a favorite? Or do you? Who do you think? Who are you voting for the win that could possibly win?
I don't have a favorite at this point in time, and I am going to wait. And I actually have an open mind. I'm like, I'm going to wait and see what they do, and then whichever one does the best, that's the one I think will win. Should win.
Okay.
I mean, I to me, I think that that's the difference between, I don't have a solid favorite this season. I like what I'm seeing, but I don't feel like I have a solid favorite. In the past, I've had really solid mm-hmm. people that I liked or disliked, and I think that everybody's kind of doing fun stuff. I don't...
But I think we can both agree that we think the top three is gonna...
We agree on the top three.
I think out of the top three that we've talked about, Trinity probably deserves it the most. I really do like Shay, and I think she's probably going to be a fan favorite, so that gives her a big chance of winning. However, I think Trinity has kind of, like, done much more than what people have expected, and she's completely gone beyond her little box, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely, and... One of the things that I have to say about this season, and it probably sounds like a big negative, which I don't mean it to, but it just is what it is. I'm thinking back on this season, and so far there have not been that many runway looks that have blown me out of the water. There have not been that many things. Like, that's one of the reasons I think I don't have, like, this huge runaway favorite, because there doesn't seem to be huge things that stand out. Like, honestly, probably... The thing that I remember most or thinking was, like, the most amazing that I've seen this season was Alexis Michelle as Kris Jenner. I thought that was...
I was going to say Peppermint.
Peppermint's Peppermint was very amazing. I also loved when Shea Coulee came out with the eyeballs on her boobs on that one where she looked like sort of like a plushie on the runway.
I don't remember that.
I really liked that one. But overall, what I'm saying is that, like think back when Raja was on, for example. Like, mm-hmm. every other week, it felt like when Raja walked out down that runway, she gave you something, like, absolutely incredible. Whether it was that gold, like, C-3PO type of outfit that she had, or mm-hmm. the time that she came out and she was painted, like, sort of like a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she did some amazing things that took drag... to an all different level for me. But I don't recall, maybe it's going to be one of those hindsight is 2020 things and we'll be like, oh my God, mm-hmm. that. But I think that because we haven't seen anybody who has felt like a huge front runner.
I don't know. I feel like Trinity has been a huge front runner.
I mean, I feel like Trinity and Sasha and Shay have all been sort of like neck and neck sort of.
I don't believe that. I think the other two, like, everyone likes their personalities, but I think Trinity by far is the most polished and has been the best competitor out of all of them.
It's a possibility. I mean, I'm not going to argue that. I just think that, for me, it's going to allow me to hold off on my... whoever's going to get my fan vote online until mm-hmm. I see that last episode, and I'm like, this is the person that edged out in the front... at the very last minute for me.
Yeah.
So, and of course, it could be a tough call, because I think that if it's Shay, Trinity, and Sasha, as we suspect it might be, I think that they're pretty unique, so each of them could bring something really different, and it could be a real coin toss on, like, okay, for me,
yeah.
at least.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. That is our recap of RuPaul's Drag Race. And we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have with us the second half of our interview with psychic John Edwards. This is episode 68 of Party Foul Radio. I'm Poyet Almar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
We'll be back in a second. For all of the latest information about LGBTQ nightlife and entertainment in the San Francisco Bay Area and Northern California, pick up your copy of Left Magazine today. Left Magazine is full of entertaining articles, information, and beautiful photo pictorials. Or visit them at liveleft.com. That's liveleft.com. All right, everybody. Welcome back to more Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Poyet Almar. Last episode, episode 67, we had the first half of an incredible 80-minute interview I did with television personality, author, and psychic medium known around the world, John Edward. John was incredible in our conversations about the connections between his support from the LGBT community and why he believes that the queer community is so supportive of what he does, as well as a significant amount of information about how he discovered his talents as a young boy in his teens. And now it is time for the second half of our interview. So please welcome back to Party Foul Radio the incredible talents of John Edward, everybody. Many people look at getting a psychic reading as, you said it was something that to do or whatever in your family, you know, like the, it's a novelty, it's a maybe a last-ditch effort to get some solace in a relationship with someone who has crossed over. But have you encountered people who seem too dependent on it?
So, yes. Oh my God, a lot of people. Before I became well-known, I had some very, very real rules. Like, before, like people couldn't come back to see me. 6 months, 9 months, like I had rules. Like, if you had a reading with me, I didn't want to see you for, it actually became a year. I would tell people that they can come back a year later. Like, I didn't want them, you know, should I? And I came, my training was at psychic fairs. So every Sunday I was sitting at a different hotel, you know, doing 15-minute readings for people. So it was a phenomenal training ground. And I remember being in Staten Island, and I probably shouldn't have said where, but it was Staten Island. But there was a woman who used to come to see me, and it seems like every time I was there, like whether it be once a month or once every 6 to 8 weeks. And finally, after maybe a year of reading her, I finally looked at her and I said, you know, I really like you a lot, and you've been very, very nice to me. You've sent me so many clients, and I said, but I don't want you to come back to me. And she like looked at me offended, and I said, you want me to tell you something that's never going to happen, because she was in a relationship that dynamic that was not positive for her. And I knew the outcome, and I kept telling her the outcome. And every time she came, she was hoping, like, in the interim, she did something different that was going to shift the outcome. And I said to her, I go, listen, I'm seeing the end result. I don't care what's happening in between. The end result is you're not winding up with him. So I would rather you, instead of coming to see me, maybe go work with a counselor or a therapist and find out why you have a codependent relationship with this guy and why you can't allow yourself to have a different type of relationship. And, you know, I would love to tell you that, you know, that conversation sent her in the right direction. It didn't. You know, I saw her, like, the next time I was at that fair at another person's table looking to find the answer that she was so desperately hoping to find, which is, you know, he was going to leave his wife and wind up with her, which never was going to happen. So I think people could look for that, and I think you got to be careful. You never want to surrender your power to somebody else. Like, you want to be informed. And it's my feeling that if I'm going to do a reading for somebody, I'm going to give you information, and I'm going to give you insights, but you're going to be the person who makes the choices based upon that, not me telling you what to do, because I don't want the karma of that, and I don't want the responsibility of your choices.
Right. I mean, I think it's a different, very different experience when you were to, if you were to seek a psychic reading looking for information versus looking for a specific response. I mean, you know, I look at it as if you went to the doctor saying, you know, I've got cancer, right? I've got cancer. Like, just tell me what I need to hear, whatever. You know, it's like, versus there's something going on, what is it?
Right.
Probably a very different perspective that people approach it with.
But... astrological charts on now. I'm not an astrologer, but I'm a huge fan of the teachings of it, because you can actually learn a lot when you look at your chart. But if I work with a client and I see that they're struggling with something, or if I know like that they've got a specific, you know, transit that's happening, that's not my field. So what I'll do is I'll say, listen, I think you should see an astrologer. Here's a couple of people that I think would work well for you. But when you make that appointment with them, I don't want you to treat them like you would treat the psychic. And they'll say, well, why? And I go, well, a psychic you don't want to give information to. A medium you don't want to give information to. You want to see what they get for you. And then at the end of that, if you have questions, then you can kind of dig a little bit deeper. But with an astrologer, I treat them like they're an MRI. I want you to look specifically in this area at this issue, and I want to know what the lesson is, because the more you could learn about the lesson and the understanding of that lesson, the better it's going to be.
So one of the things that you are most well known for is the celebrity clientele that you've worked with and the celebrity individuals. And I was wondering how you made that move from doing house parties and psychic fairs to having a celebrity clientele.
I think the way that happened, let me just say this. I organically developed a clientele. Everything around me has been like, you know, I don't know how old you are, but there used to be a commercial where they, you know, it was a shampoo commercial. It's like, and they told two friends and so on and so on and so on and so on. And that's how my career actually started. So the group stuff only started because I couldn't keep up with the amount of people who wanted to see me privately. And then from the group stuff, then it became, well, I went on radio. And then from radio, I was on TV. And everything was like an organic process. And the celebrity stuff came by word of mouth. It was a, you know, I want to, you know, I want you to read for a friend of mine. And that friend turned out to be this person. But when I did the television show Crossing Over, that was probably when the celebrity thing kicked in a bigger way, because in the world of television back then, they believed, I say they, the network, that the audience wanted to see celebrities be read. And I never felt that way. I felt that the audience wanted to watch real people get read. Not that celebrities aren't real, but that it's so difficult to read for a celebrity on camera because their lives are public. Their lives are out there. Things that take place with them. And there's a credibility issue because it's like, oh, well, you could have known that or you could have read that. That makes your job harder. So at a certain point on Crossing Over, when I would do celebrity readings, I would actually come out on the stage and I would sit in my chair, and then they would bring the celebrity out and sit them behind me so I wouldn't know who was there. And it gave me the luxury of being able to read just through the reading, and that person, whoever the celebrity was, would know that I didn't know that it was them. And I got that, actually. I stole that idea from the University of Arizona because I was tested by them, and that's how they did the testing. They would bring people in and sit them behind us to rule out reading facial cues and body language. So I was like, I'm going to do that on the show because it just, you know, it made it easier. But from doing that, you know, then people talk, and then this person talks, and, you know, you meet this person, and you meet this person. So I've had the opportunity to meet and read some pretty amazing people. Probably my least favorite thing to do.
Because of the credibility factor.
Because of the credibility factor, it's a harder reading to do. I'm still the guy from the psychic fairs. Like, I'd rather read a complete stranger than somebody that's famous. You know, unless it's somebody that, you know, I've wanted to meet or read. Like, I remember being in the UK, and there was a British medium, and we had lunch, and he said to me, who's your must read? And I didn't understand the question. And I was like, I don't know what you mean. He goes, you know, you're like, your celebrity must read. Who's your celebrity must read? And I looked at him, and I went, I don't have that. And he, like, was perplexed by my answer. And I knew that the way that I responded was that I insulted him because he clearly had one. And I was like, well, who's yours? You know, I got completely flipped around. But if you said to me, like, you know, you could do a celebrity reading with, you know, these three A-listers, or you could do three, you know, random regular people are winning hand over hand, I didn't like doing the celebrity on the show. The network forced that because they felt that it made the ratings go up.
I think people have that curiosity. You know, they want to know who it is that you specifically, they ask me all the time, like, who would be your ideal interview or whatever. And from my perspective, sometimes I find that the people that you're most interested in as a personality might carry a lot of different reasons why you would not necessarily want to, in your case, read them, or in my case, interview them, because...
Right. Without saying names, but how many times have you actually done the interview, or, like, my case, I've done the reading, and I've been done, and I'd be like, God, I wish I didn't do that. Like, now I'll never look at them the same way ever again.
Right. And I've found that when people ask me, for example, some of my favorite interviews that I've ever done, I think this actually probably relates very much to kind of your own experience, because we talked about the energy that you pick up from people earlier. It's like some of my favorite interviews that I've done with celebrities have not been huge name celebrities. They've been people that turned out to be wildly entertaining or very amusing, or that there was just a really positive connection with.
I became really, really good friends with Patty Duke. And, you know, I knew her for years and got a chance to see her right before she passed. And, like, that was very, very, very moving for me to know that, like, this legend and icon went from being a client to a friend to, like, family for me on that level. So I've had the opposite extreme happen, too. So I want to kind of, you know, keep the balance there for you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's exactly my own experience in terms of doing interviews, when it feels like it transcends just an interaction, you know, where...
And don't you find that, like, you know, when you talk about the celebrity, the people who haven't quite make it yet have an energy of being, you know, a little bit like they're playing the role of they made it. And then when you have the people who actually have achieved the level of craziness, that ego part of it is kind of like almost hard to work or manage with energy-wise. But it's the people who had that and no longer have it, those are the people who are cool.
Right, because of the fact that it's no longer the driving force. And I think that also, in terms of the ego that you're talking about, quite often people recognize that what they thought they wanted becomes almost a trap that they've fallen into, and then they can't find real or authentic interactions with people, and I think they like it a lot more when they feel that connection with somebody. Because they're aware people want to know who they are, connect with them for all the wrong reasons. And so if your motive is kind of pure, then they, you know, it shifts their perspective on it too.
Right. 100%.
It seems to me that this is something that probably is really enriching in most of the capacities, but have there been experiences for you where you had to deliver information to people that has been not what they want to hear and they didn't take it very well?
Yeah, there've been lots of moments where, you know, the truth of a circumstance is sometimes very, very difficult. You know, there've been moments where, you know, whether it be doing a psychic reading and telling somebody that they're not going to wind up with that person. I had somebody in my office literally stand up in the middle of the reading and throw money at me, and because she didn't like what I had to say. And, you know, she literally took the fee and threw it at me after 10 minutes because she was another one who wasn't hearing what she wanted to hear. And I was like, whoa. I'm like, you're going to have to take your cash back and just please leave. I've had to deliver information where I knew that somebody was sick and they needed to get that checked out. But, you know, I'm not a doctor, I can't diagnose, but making sure that I got them to pay attention to the fact that they needed to get it looked at, only to find out that they indeed were ill and were very appreciative. Like, that's always tough. Anytime you're dealing with a parent who's lost a child and you have to bring through information about that, it's the most devastating thing that takes, I feel like, a piece of my soul every single time, but it's equally as rewarding to be able to let them know that love is still there. So yeah, it's a heavy responsibility. I remember when I was about 15, 16, and I started doing this, my uncle, my mom's brother, pulled me aside and he said, I want to talk to you. And he was kind of like a dad for me, because my dad and I weren't close. And he said, are you sure you want to walk down this path? And I said, yeah, absolutely. I go, it's like, you know, it's totally cool, like, what I can do. And he goes, it is totally cool what you can do. He of responsibility. He goes, and your life is never going to be the same. He goes, and I don't know if anybody's telling you that. And I can tell you exactly, when I tell you, I can tell you exactly where I was when he said that. I know exactly where I was in the car, on what road, and what time of day it was. And it was spot on. And I don't think I really heeded that at 15, 16. I think I was coming from that place of ego, of, hey, look what I can do. Like, look how accurate I am. Look what I predicted. Look at this, look at that. And it wasn't until, like, maybe 2 years of doing this when I saw my uncle's death happen and I couldn't stop it. At 16, that was hard. That was really hard because it was the first time I felt like the universe backslapped me in a big, big way. And then a year and a half later, my mom was diagnosed with cancer, and I didn't see anything connected to that. So I had these two really powerful, bookended, personal family moments, one where I saw it and tried to stop it and couldn't, and one where I didn't see anything and couldn't stop it. And that to me, I think, was the humbling. And I think a lot of people get these moments in their lives where the humbling happens and we have to make a choice of who do we become after that? You know, do we become like an asshole after that? Or do we allow the humbling to teach us the lesson that we're supposed to learn and try to become a better person? And I made a decision to look at this subject matter in a very, very specific way, which was, it's not about you. It's about what you're allowed to participate in, and you will now forever treat it with the respect that it deserves.
I had an experience a few years ago where I decided I was going to look into different means of otherworldliness or whatever for myself.
Okay.
And we have a wonderful shop here in San Francisco. It's called Crystal Way, and it's about metaphysical, all this stuff. Like, you name it, whether it's from tarot cards to crystals to things that allow you to get in touch. And I was looking at, and basically what I'm asking is if this experience is common or if it's something that, whatever. But I was looking at these different things, and I picked up a set of tarot cards.
Okay.
And I had looked at, like, you know, I was just looking at the pictures on the box or whatever, but I picked up this one and I legitimately felt something akin to a jolt of energy. Like, it was very defined. At the time, I was not overly, I was rather skeptical about something like this, but it was very strange because of the fact that I noticeably had a different reaction to one than the other, a very physical one. And I was wondering if that kind of thing is... like, if that's common for people, if it is indicative of something, or what is your experience around those things?
I think it can be very common. I think it is normal. I think that you're basically admitting to me right now that you are a very sensitive and intuitive person. I believe that everybody has a team of guides that work with them, and I believe that in that moment, you were guided or connected on some level to that specific deck. Do you remember the deck?
Well, I actually went and bought it, but unfortunately my dogs ate it, which is possibly a good thing because you told me not to dabble in those realms and open my door. So,
okay, now where I thought we're going. But if you were to, look at that tarot, like when I was a kid growing up, my grandmother, you know, we had a torture to the exec, comes to the house. I went looking for a deck of playing cards, and I opened up the hutch drawer, and there were a deck of tarot cards there. And I pulled them out, and I went, Grandma, what are these? And she looked at them, and she went, don't touch them, put them back, they're evil. And I dropped it like it was a hot potato, and I was like, well, why are they in your drawer then? Why are they there? And she said, well, one of the psychics that came to the house, like, left them here by accident, and, you know, we just leave them there. I'm like, yeah, but they're plastic cards. Like, how could plastic cards be evil? And she's like, no. So I had that opinion until I got involved with the subject matter. So if you look at artwork gives you a feeling, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So if I said to you, there's the Justice League of America poster that's in front of you, and there's Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman and Green Lantern and, you know, all the other superheroes that were a part of that, each superhero and each symbol kind of has a connotation. So if I say to you, describe Wonder Woman for me, you're going to go to her golden lasso of truth. You're going to talk about her bulletproof of using that because it's timely and the movie's coming out, you're going to know what Wonder Woman represents, right?
Right.
So now, that visualization has a meaning to you. So each one of those cards has a meaning in the same way. So when you look at those cards, they give you the archetype of the human consciousness and the experience. And when they are put together, they kind of tell a story. Now, a lot of people think that tarot had the negative connotation because they were used, you know, by the gypsies in Europe to take advantage of people and do, you know, read their fortunes and, you know, put a curse or a hex or whatever. But they're really just a psychological tool that can be used, like astrology, like numerology, to help you understand circumstances, insights, and intuitively actually unplug. I'm not a big advocate of people using the cards for themselves, like in doing a reading. But if somebody's got a question, if they want to meditate on a card, if there's a lesson that you're supposed to work, like, you know, if you want to start your day off with meditation and shuffle the cards up and, you know, pull a card out and meditate on that card and say, you know, what am I supposed to be working on today? You could actually use that. But your feeling, I think, is a very real feeling.
Yeah, I mean, it was just bizarre to me in that situation because, as I said, I wasn't even opening the cards or whatever. They're in boxes But the thing was, I picked up several boxes, had nothing, you know, there was nothing. And then when I picked up that one, it was a physical feeling. And I just thought it was so weird.
So, like, if I was doing a card reading for somebody, and I would have them cut the cards into three piles after they shuffle them, I would have them hold their hand over each one of the three piles and have them tell me which pile did they feel the pull towards. And if they pulled, you know, towards one of those piles, that's the pile I pick up and start with.
I mean,
it's normal. So it's like when you have a pull towards something, I tell my kids all the time, question everything. If you ask the question why, W-H-Y, if you ask the question why, you become wise, W-I-S-E. So it's really important to question everything. Dig deep, explore, because if you're exploring, then that leads to discovery. And if you have discovery, then that can help you raise your awareness. And if you raise your awareness, then you can turn those things into action. That's how you get out of stagnated situations.
This month, you're wrapping up your 9th season of your Evolve online community programming.
Yep.
I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about how that is, in fact, evolving and how it's growing and changing as a means for you to stay in touch with the people who faithfully follow what you do.
About 10 years ago, I had just wrapped up my third season of my second show called John R. Cross Country on the Wii Network, and they wanted to do another 3 seasons, of which I said, thank you, this has been a wonderful opportunity, but I feel like I'm done here. And they thought I was joking, and I wasn't joking, and I was done there. It was a wonderful experience. They were great people to work with. But I knew I needed to pioneer this digitally when it wasn't popular. So I'd like you to imagine 10 years ago telling people that you're going to create an online subscription where people are going to pay to become a member to a community where everything on the internet was completely free. And, like, it was just not the norm. There was no subscription model, whatever. But I wanted it to be something that was a community, and I didn't want it to be where people would be attacked. I wanted to create a family environment. So I started this thing that started off one way and is now the Evolve community. And what we have done, and we finished season 9 and we're starting season 10 now, is we use, and I say we, the producers, myself, my co-host, we use this platform of Evolve to have conversations. So, like, as soon as you and I are done, I'm going downstairs to the studio and we're going to be talking to Dr. Deborah Serrani, and we're going to do a deep dive into the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why, and explore all the aspects of the show and the difference of opinions that people have about whether the show is a positive message or a negative message dealing with suicide. But it's really going to be used as a platform to get a conversation to be started. Stuff that I would never be allowed to do on television today. Like, I would never be allowed to have that conversation on TV today because it's not where TV is. The production of television is all about pre-producing, producing, controlling the production, making it conflict-based, reality-based, and it doesn't, not a lot of places where I see that would allow a dialogue or discussion about suicide to happen. It's, so that's what we're doing. We're tackling subjects. And I read people, you know, so they still get me, so they get me, you know, answering their questions and doing the readings. And but you know, we've had authors come on. Fern Roney, who is a journalist, wrote a book about a novel about her family called Better in the Morning, which deals with spiritual undertone. So she came on. We've had folks come on. Dr. Steve Maraboli, who's one of the most quoted living people in the world. You know, celebrities quoted him, the Pope quoted him, like, you know, everybody quotes Steve. You know, he comes on. So it's a place, a community where people come to evolve. So we want to leave them better than we find them.
You're the second celebrity interview we have done on this podcast in the last month that has focused on the topic of 13 Reasons Why. It seems to be, the production itself seems so controversial because it's got a lot of people who think it's absolutely spectacular dialogue about a subject, and then there's other people who feel it glamorizes. It's a very polarizing subject matter right now for a show that I've actually personally never seen.
Yeah, I mean, from a, you know, if you said to me, like, what show do I want to discuss from a community standpoint, I would be discussing Sense8. It's like, I think Sense8 is an absolutely spectacular show. I love the message of tolerance and inclusivity and compassion and spirituality and the amazing work that you, Wachowski, have done with that, both seasons.
And it's filmed here in San Francisco.
But this is important because suicide is one of those hot-button topics. And it's funny because my co-host has one perspective. She loved it for the perspective that she has, and I have very mixed feelings about it because I have a 14-year-old and a 10-year-old, and I don't really normally say I don't want them to watch something, but it's not something that I would want them to watch unless they were going to be watching it with me directly.
And why?
Well, I think it gets into the... I do fall into the glamorizing part of it. I think that teens and kids, we've all been there, get into their own space. And I think that they are living in a world that is very, very hard because of social media. If you had a problem with somebody in school, it stayed in that school. If there was a burn book, it was in that school. Now, it's literally like exploring the social media aspect of it. Somebody could be slut-shamed on social media, and it could be viral, and it's very, very damaging. So that capacity of it, I want to talk about, because I think having conversations about the social media and the bullying and the cyberbullying and all of that is equally as important as the connotation of what took place with the rape and what led up to it. My problem with it is how it came together, that it seemed that it was all of these other people's faults that she made this choice to do what she did. And I felt that it was very difficult for me as a parent to watch that, and extremely difficult for me as a medium to watch that, because the Kate Walsh character, the mother, I sit in front of her a lot. I see that face a lot. Like, that woman played that role spot on. And I think it's really, really very, very difficult. And I think that from a parental standpoint, to listen to those tapes, and it's going to then assign the blame to 13 other people or 12 other people as opposed to the individual who actually did the deed.
Yeah, I always have... I mean, I 100% understand to some degree, based on my own life experience, some of the ways that other people's actions can certainly impact an individual. You know, I'm 44 years old, and I have maliciously rejected Facebook friend requests from people who were horrible to me when I was 14. So 30 years have gone by, and I still will not allow those people to participate in my life, even by proxy. But at the same time, you know, looking back on those experiences that I had growing up, I know that if I had made a decision no matter how bad things had gotten, to take my own life, that decision is mine because I made it through that experience without harming myself or killing myself. And, you know, and I know that there is, I think that sometimes you're absolutely right when you say that children can they live in a life of their own, you know, they're in their mind a lot. They're, you know, they don't have the opportunity to escape. There's no certain boundaries that keep them from going beyond that, but, and they look for this way out. But I think from an adult perspective, when you look at it and say, it's, it can be a horrible experience, but you just have to get through it.
Right. Well, somebody said to me, a woman said to me, she's like, I don't understand, you know, why a teen has to, you know, feel a certain way and blah, 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 blah. And I said, can I just be honest? And she's like, yeah. I go, are you going for menopause? And she's like, excuse me? I go, are you going for menopause? And she goes, I am going through menopause. I want you to talk to me about that. She's like, what do you mean? I go, tell me about your hot flashes. Oh, she's like, please. She's like, you know, one minute I'm like this, and the next minute I'm over here and I'm outside. It's like, you know, it's in the middle of the winter and I'm standing outside and it's like, blah, blah. And she literally went through this entire thing about how her entire body's changing and the hormones in her body are changing and how it's affecting her moods and how it's that. And I went, okay, now let's go back to being a teen. And she looked at me and she went, okay, I'll shut up now.
Yeah, I mean,
because she understood that the hormonal shifts and changes that are happening in developing into an adult, that she was able to identify with it in a different way. So I think it's important to have a dialogue about the show. And I think it's something that is exactly what you said. It's polarizing. And it's funny because I have mixed feelings because I thought it was a well-written, well-acted, wonderfully cast. I thought the story was, you know, was good. I just have a couple, I have a little bit of a, the way that the story unfolds, I guess I have a fear that kids watching that will get ideas that it's okay to do this. And because she got all the attention from all of the people in the way that she did it, that's going to cause people, or that could cause people to want to copycat that. That's my concern.
Right. It's presented as, in many ways, that taking her own life is the ultimate revenge on these people. I come from a completely different perspective that, as I said to you earlier, I've maliciously declined certain people's friend requests on Facebook, but I also maliciously accept other people's because I think truly the best way to say, for all intents and purposes, fuck you for what you had to say when I was 14 years old is that I have an incredible life now, and not to say that getting married straight out of high school and having, you know, grandchildren at 44 is a bad thing, because I don't think it is. But that's not the road that I decided to travel. That wasn't the road that was mapped out for me. And you can just look at what I'm doing and realize that you probably missed the boat on something cool. So, you know, I think that a huge part of that is having realized that experiences from 30 years ago don't have to define who I chose to be even the day after that experience. It's
right,
a survivor's mentality.
Like, like that girl enter life in the way that she did. And I think for me, the real problem that I have is that they showed it. I don't think they should have showed it because it became somewhat of a how-to. So, like, I think that there's implications of it, and then there's the actual, you know, the discovery and the, it was very, from a medium standpoint, having to work with parents who've gone through that, it was very painful to watch the visual depiction of that. But still equally as important to have the conversation, and that's why we're dating today.
I think that it's great that it brings the topic up. As you said, it allows people to foster the discussion. And, you know, the idea of online bullying doesn't stop at when you graduate high school. I mean, you're a public figure. We connected, you and I connected through Twitter, through a tweet, which obviously you access and you can read. And for as many positive responses, once you achieve a certain level of success, you elicit equal numbers, possibly even more, of people who are flippantly making comments from their home or wherever they're at without a single thought that that's actually going to reach a person and potentially have an impact. Some of them probably decidedly want an impact. They want to, you know, get that dig in from...
Yeah, they want to play an energetic game of tennis. They want to serve a negative ball to you, and they want you to keep it in play. But that, I also recognize, is their issue, their challenge. So, I love the block button.
Uh-huh.
I have a great technique. Feel free to use it. Is when somebody engages me on a certain level like that, I respond to them. I wait until they see it, and then I block them. Because then there's nothing like irking somebody when they can't react to you.
That is really vicious, and I'm going to employ that.
And it usually ends, I'm giving away my secret here for you now, it usually ends with me saying namaste with prayer hands. And, like, you know, the people that are around me in my community, like, you know, the people that follow me, like, they all know if there's a namaste with prayer hands, you know, they definitely know what that means.
I grew up in the South. That's the equivalent of bless your little heart. Oh, bless you. Like, you...
One day I got so aggravated that I had to respond. I literally typed out a response, but I did it numerologically. So it's like, I literally, like, it became a teaching example for people. Like, they had to figure out, like, what exactly was I telling this person to go do? And I did it. I did it with the numbers. It was like a whole series, like, of like, you know, break the code to know how I was dissing you back. And I was like... The beauty of it, the person that was attacking me was, you know, clearly not of the intelligence that was going to be able to do that. So it became a lesson for the other people who could appreciate it. But I find that, you know, namaste, prayer hands, and block just really is very satisfying.
Honestly, like, the things that I would think that people would attack me for online are usually the things that nobody attacks me for. It's very trivial stuff, usually, in my case. And I'm just like, really? You're expending so much energy arguing something... I tweet about pro wrestling a lot. How seriously can you take that, though? You know, it's like, and then I don't like so-and-so, a particular character, and people get really hurt. I'm like, how are you invested in this? Like, the person in question probably doesn't care. Like, why are you fighting their battle for them?
Exactly. Well, everybody's got to have a cause.
Absolutely. Well, John, thank you so much for talking with us today. I really appreciate it, and I feel...
Thank you. Great questions. Great conversation, and I'm very happy that we connected on Twitter. So
me too. And thank you for, you know, making your expertise available to our listeners. And as you've said, and as we both actually indicated, that no matter whether a person is inclined to believe in what you do or not, at least our conversation is going to present people with the opportunity to listen, possibly gain some questions, gain a little education, and then take the conversation forward. Whether that's you're never going to believe what I heard on, you know, this podcast, or, you know, I heard something and it maybe changed my perspective a little bit. So thank you for doing that.
Very cool. Thank you for having me.
All right. Have a wonderful day. Bye.
Take care.
All right, everybody. That was psychic medium John Edward sharing his experience as a globally recognized psychic medium. He told us last week that he is a clairvoyant, clairsentient, and... Oh, what was the third one? Clairvoyant, clairsentient, and clairaudient. That's right. He sees, hears, and feels presences from the other world. You can find out more about John, as well as enroll in a membership in his online Evolve community, where you have access to full range of his online original digital media content, as well as personal updates on his whereabouts, upcoming John Edward experiences, and much more at his website. Go visit johnedward.net. We'll be back with more Party Foul Radio right after this. Party Foul Radio is very pleased to have a working media sponsorship relationship with GuideToGay.com. That's GuideToGay.com, Australia's premier LGBT news and travel outlet. For all of your informational needs about life down under for the LGBTQ community, as well as updates and features about favorite travel destinations of the queer community around the world, visit guidetogay.com. That's guidetogay.com. All right, everybody, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. This is your co-host, Miss Poya Del Mar. We just heard from acclaimed psychic medium John Edward, and we are excited to have this episode back-to-back celebrity interviews for you. At this time, we are ready to bring you our interview with Krista Bell. She is an actress singer who is now found weekly on the rebooted Showtime version of a popular and iconic mystery series, Twin Peaks, from the crazed mind of director David Lynch, who has been a longtime collaborator with Krista Bell and has actually directed most of her recent music videos, as well as produced her very first album called This Train. Krista Bell's upcoming album, her second full length, is titled We Dissolve and will hit all online retailers as well as local record stores near you on June 9th. Please welcome to Party Foul Radio the beautiful talents of Krista Bell, everyone.
Hi.
Thank you for talking to us and to me specifically.
My pleasure.
Yeah, I'm excited to learn more about your new album, We Dissolve, and I'm excited to learn what you're able to tell us about your participation in Twin Peaks. So,
yes, well, I'm excited to share. Good deal.
To some degree, it must be frustrating, but your career has been so intimately tied to David Lynch from the very beginning, it seems, of what most of your following know about you. And I was wondering if you could share about how that relationship started and how it's evolved over the years.
Absolutely. Well, David and I met many, many years ago, probably, you know, and I'm not the greatest with age and time, but it was 1999, 2000, and it all came about to me in a way that really felt like, dare I say, destiny, but I had a meeting with a man who had this intuition that David and I would connect and make music together. And this person was actually able to make that meeting come to fruition. And I had this beautiful day with David many, many years ago. And on the day that we met, we wrote a song together. And because I was very young at that time, and I was really still open, so open, well, and I hope that I'm still open now, but even in a different way, open, still learning so much about life and about who I was as an artist and how music affected me, you know, in every way, and all of this process of discovery. And so meeting David at that time and having this beautiful musical connection was something that was quite extraordinary. But, and even at that young age, I knew that it was a very precious connection, because you have to kiss a lot of frogs in the world of you know, musical collaboration to find the artists that you really connect with and the ones that really just like light you up to create with. And so at that time, meeting David and having this, you know, instant kind of musical chemistry was already like just such a score. And then the fact that it was David, it was just kind of honestly beyond comprehension of how remarkable that was. But even just to meet someone that you're really excited to create with was the first step. And then that it was David, it was just kind of out of control. So meeting him at that young age and then having him be in my life, you know, in a lot of my impressionable years, and then having him bring things to my life, you know, like transcendental meditation and just watching how a consummate artist like moves through the world, all of that was very affecting. And then of course there was the music that we were making together and the fact that there was an extraordinary amount of patience that it took, you know, from the time that we first met to over a decade later when we would finally release our my debut album, This Train. And during the course of that time, I became an adult and all of that is like infused in the music, like my travels from kind of ingenue and and she's more, hopefully more sophisticated person. But and then experiences of marriages and divorces and life and death and all of that was just kind of in the music, and also touched by David's influence. And so all of this happened and continues to happen. And then we got to make another album together, Somewhere in the Nowhere. And then now we have this new chapter in our life together, which is Twin Peaks. And so suffice to say that it's been a long and strange, magical, tremendous journey together that has affected me greatly as an artist and a person, and continues to do so to this very millisecond.
I'm sitting here trying to imagine what it would be like to be a young artist, musician, who's kind of looking for that break, who's looking for that creative spark, and to be paired up with, at a very young age, somebody who is iconic, and we're talking Oscar nominee and multiple times over, and David is quite a personality in and of himself, in addition to his accomplishments. So what was that experience like, being so young and finding yourself in that presence?
David has this ability that's uncanny, because all of those things that you said are true, and even more. David, for me, so much of it is that David also has this deep compassion for humanity, and wants to heal the world and save the world and bring world peace. So on top of everything else, there's that other level of this human that has such a beautiful spirit. And I think the way that it's worked out is that David has this spirit that is very welcoming. So you're almost like, when you're in his presence, it's just a warmth and a desire to connect that he has, that you're just kind of, you're at ease, and you don't know why. It doesn't make any sense, but he has this ability to just kind of make everything cool, and to be super chill, and to be compassionate for where you are, and then it infuses into you, and you just kind of relax into the fact that this person wants to have a great experience, and this person wants there to be a flow and an ease in the conversation. He's not looking for there to be any stress or anxiety or, oh my fucking God, it's David fucking Lynch. He doesn't want that. He doesn't try to create that. He does the opposite. He looks to create ease and sweetness and just yes, we're here. Let's enjoy this moment. Don't worry about anything, and let's see where it goes. So David is a huge reason why all of that is possible. Just the way he is, his beingness is just like, he wants to have a great, easy time. And so he facilitates that, what he offers, the connection, and what he, just how, what he radiates. He's just like, he's funny. He's totally down to earth. He's like, and you just kind of are like, cool. Like, I'm here with David Lynch. It's like, insane that this is happening, and yet this guy is just like the sweetest. And so, okay, let's do this. Let's see what happens.
I have to admit that your music, whether it's from This Train, which for obvious reasons will apply to what I'm about to say, to what I have heard, I have actually sat and listened to all of We Dissolved this morning, and your sound feels like the soundtrack to a David Lynch film. And I wonder, because he met you at such an impressionable age, if that was pre-existing in you, or it has been shaped by this now almost 20-year relationship that you've had as a collaborator and as his muse, and, with him as your mentor.
I mean, it comes from both sides. I think part of it is that, even from a very young age, when I first saw Twin Peaks, the music of Twin Peaks was what was just like opened me up to a whole new level of what music and visuals could conjure within me. Like, I was just like, okay, this is serious. that impression came even long before I met David. But then there's also a sensibility, you know, David attracts artistically, I think, you know, kind of beings that resonate in that world that he creates. And part of that is that we, you know, maybe as artists are generating that from within as well, something that is complementary or that works well with what David's artistic entity creates. So there's that kind of lovely collusion that's happening, you know, even, you know, of course, and it's infused by what David is creating, but it's also already a part of your being that you come in with, and then it either resonates or, you know, or it doesn't. But so absolutely, David has made a profound impression on my life as an artist, but there's also some of that part of me that just resonates deeply with the type of artistry that he does, and I have that in me too. You know what I'm saying? So it's like it comes from both angles. Like, you know, it's like your first crush. It's like when you see that boy or that girl or whoever it is that is igniting that flame within you, is it that person? And there'd be like, you know, just had to see what it was that got my fire going. You know, like it comes from both angles. Did someone create your type, or was that type already there, and then they just walked in? So I look at it from all angles, because, you know, I've created music with, you know, 50 different producers, and I've written, you know, another 20 albums that have never been released, and all of that is in there, and David's voice is just so strong, and I feel so deeply connected to what he does, and so it's all of those things. It's all of those things.
And the reason I say that your music that I've been exposed to sounds like a David Lynch production, and it marries so beautifully in all these gorgeous videos that you guys have done together, by the way. You know, it's smoky and sensual and mysterious and haunting. Your voice is kind of haunting. And I think that those are all things that would be applicable in that mysterious, otherworldly, dreamlike state that David evokes on screen so beautifully.
Yes, and David really brings that out of me and of his collaborators as well. The music that David and I make, he writes, he composes the tracks along with the wonderful Dean Hurley, who is the composer and David's engineer at Asymmetrical Studio, because they make music in these experiments that they do in the studio. And if something comes from one of his experiments that he thinks is a Christabel David Lynch track, he plays it for me. And then I feel it, and then I'm like, okay, David, this is working. I feel this inside me. Let's go with this. And then he has some lyrics, and then or he writes some lyrics on the spot, and then all of this energy that's flowing and all of that alchemy, you know, creates this mood that you're talking about, this mysteriousness, this dream-like state, and that's where David is so comfortable, and the collaborators that he brings in, I think, you know, work on that level. So whether it's with David in the studio with him, which is like maybe my favorite place to be, or in Bristol, UK, you know, with John Parrish, those qualities are part of, I think, you know, what brought David and me together. And it also carries through, because that's what I love to do. Like, I'm trying to create a transportive situation. I want to take you with me someplace. And so those are the mediums that, you know, I feel the most comfortable in, which is that the world of a bit of intrigue and very sensual and maybe spiritual and hopefully cosmic and a bit otherworldly and dreamlike. You know, like that's my territory where I love to be, and I want to take you if you're willing to go there with me.
You mentioned John Parrish, and he is your key collaborator on this new album, We Dissolve. And I was wondering, if you could describe, after so long collaborating with David, what the difference in experience was like going into the studio with somebody who's well-known, for example, for his work with PJ Harvey and other sure. iconic artists in their own rights.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I feel like I struck gold with John Parrish. I mean, the man is a phenomenal musician. I mean, he's really just remarkable how talented this person is. And then, of course, a gifted producer. And then he's this amazing person, like this really great person. I feel like as far as, you know, the producers in my life, the captains of the ships that I've chosen in David and now John Parrish, I mean, I couldn't have done any better, like just with beautiful humans who are just off the charts talented. And John, you know, of course there are difference in the styles and the approaches of, as far as producer, but what's the same is this confidence. Both John and David have a very strong sense of direction, and there's this like awareness that is unriddled and unsullied by self-doubt or at least, you know, this is how it's coming across to me. But they know exactly how to tap into what's appropriate and necessary for a song to have its integrity and to come out intact and exactly how it should be from the process of, you know, demo, you know, to the record. And so this is something that, you know, there's a lot of potential pitfalls that can you know, trip up a producer and an artist in the creation of an album. But when you have someone who's so sure-footed and guiding you, and you respect and admire, the, you know, someone's work, and you feel like the what's happening between you, that you really, you know, you choose a great producer, but really it's leaping into the unknown. You don't know what's going to happen. There is no sure thing. No matter if you're great, the producer's great, the musicians are great, it's still like terrifying. You don't know what's going to happen, and it means everything to you. The stakes are so high. Everything is just like so tenuous. And then you realize at a certain point that it's absolutely appropriate and that it's perfect and that you've made the right choice. And with John, that feeling was immediate. I was just like, got into a room together and started making the music, and I was like, okay, this is it. This is right. This is exactly appropriate. This is the perfect thing to follow my music with David. I'm in love with the songs. The songs I wrote with a songwriting partner named Christopher Smart, and we wrote songs for what seems like an eternity to come up with the 10 tracks for the record. Then we got into the studio with John Parrish, and everything that was supposed to happen happened. And you know, and the wild card, because there's always got to be one, was that during the sessions of We Dissolve, I lost my voice. And I could only sing for the last 4 days of the recording sessions. And so I was having this kind of existential crisis while it was happening, hearing all this beautiful music being made and just kind of croaking out, you know, and wanting to sing, you know, so badly, and my voice was just gone until the last 4 days of recording. And so, you know, it can't be perfect. There's got to be some lose your mind moment, but all of that is part of the process. So, you know, John was just such a blessing, and, you know, like, you don't know. You just don't know. You make sacrifices. You do your, you know, ritual dances, and you pray, and then it happens, and you're like, okay, this worked. And I can't sing yet, but I'm just gonna have faith that it's all gonna work out. And it did. And that's that.
Well, I mean, you mentioned something that it's that intangible, I think, that goes into any relationship, honestly, whether that's romantic, personal, or professional, that you can have amazing people who are incredible, talented, whatever, in their own right, but the chemistry is simply not there when they come together. That is such a key component when making anything artistic. The chemistry has to be right to elicit the best from everyone.
I mean, mean, it's the X factor. David calls it, he has a lot of, you know, terms for it, you know, what happens when you're in the zone, you know, it's just striking gold. But there's no way to guarantee that. And even if you have a formula that seems to work, it's not always going to work. And, you know, that's the artist's journey. You know, you're taking all the pieces and you're putting them together and you're giving it all you've got. And then sometimes it just doesn't work. That chemistry just doesn't pop. And then you just kind of have to lick your wounds and move on. And yeah, but when it does happen, you're like, oh, it's the best. It's like, it's a fulfillment that's unlike, you know, anything else. And because there's that elusive quality, you know, that you have to just appreciate it when it happens, and it's not money in the bank until it's money in the bank, you know?
Absolutely, and sometimes you can legitimately, as a listener, hear when everyone is firing on all cylinders, but the chemistry's not there, because you're like, okay, if somebody else were singing this, or somebody else were producing this, this would be great, but there's something that's just not there. You know what I mean? I've heard it many times.
Yes, and sometimes it's even within the course of a single movie or a single record that, you know, it undulates. And that's okay, too, because it's like, we're not machines and we're not robots. We're on the wave and we're riding the wave and we're giving all that we can to the experience. But it makes those times when it hits it, those moments just like all the more, you know, just spellbinding because it's happening, and it's like almost like nobody fucking move. It's happening, you know, and then you're out of it again. You're like, okay, well, you know, you fail from in those moments, and it's a super precious thing. Yeah.
Now, as somebody who's been so close to David for such a long time, clearly you must have some insight into what made him, after 25 years, nonetheless, want to revisit the world of Twin Peaks. And what can you give us as insight into that?
Well, simply that, more so than any other person I've ever known, David is an artist, and when he is compelled by ideas or dreams or visions, he feels, I don't know if it's a responsibility, but he feels within his artist being that desire to honor the ideas that are coming forth. You know, these ideas are like the most remarkable things, and so you want to nurture that, and so all I get, you know, and David is an entity so mysterious, and all I can do is, you know, my best guess, but I think that, you know, David was being tapped on the shoulder by something that was, to him, you know, an irresistible calling because of who he is in the world. And he is an artist, and he is, you know, this is what he does, and he has to do it. And so it wasn't like he can't try, you know, if David doesn't have the inspiration for something, it's not like he can just pull it out because he's David Lynch. It's like it comes, it's there or it's not there. And for Twin Peaks, it was there, and it couldn't be ignored, and it had the supportive nature, and it had its own destiny, and David is a steward to art in that way. It's like it's almost like it's beyond him. He is, you know, kind of like, let the ideas come to him because he's the most gracious host, and he follows through, and he has this remarkable ability to get the fucking job done. And even if it seems insurmountable, even if it seems like so daunting, like who would do that? It seems like a masochist would take on this thing that is so highly revered, and just like, but David's not about that for him. And this is all coming from my perspective. I cannot, you know, speak for David on any level. David, you know, he might say something completely different, but just from my perspective, David, witnessing a consummate artist, someone who is tuned in to so many dimensions, who's a scholar of esoteric subjects, this is almost like this is his destiny, and he's fulfilling his destiny, and that's all there is to it.
Most every single element of what we will see over this eight-part series on Showtime.
18 parts.
18 parts. Okay, well, that's much more exciting than 8 parts. So what most everything about this recreation and continuation of the story is secret and mysterious, which we would absolutely expect from David and anything associated with him. But what are you able to tell listeners and me about your particular participation in this?
What I can say about my participation is that, and really maybe, you know, for anyone who's involved, there's this reverence. I'm a part of something that's so much bigger than me. I don't quite know how I made it here. I don't know how I'm a part of this, but there is, it has its own world, and somehow I was magnetized to it. And I think my character and my what I maybe bring to the story is like an element of discovery. You know, I'm a new character, and I am discovering, you know, Twin Peaks maybe in some ways like the audience maybe, you know, and this is all my own conjecture, but my character, she's so curious, and she's so excited, and she's also very studious and analytical, and she's taking it all in. You know, like I can only imagine other people are as well. She's just doing it from the inside. And so I think maybe that there'll be a bit of connection, hopefully, with my character, you know, the trip that people are taking when they're watching Twin Peaks. But, you know, from me as a person, not my character, I'm like, you know, I'm watching it unfold, and it's like another dimension. It's going into worlds and places that aren't tapped into otherwise, really, in life, except when you're dreaming or in those parts, you know, right before you go to sleep, in those other levels of consciousness where you're like, you know, you're somewhere else and you're not in your body, and you realize that, you know, you're this expansive being, and that's where you're going with Twin Peaks. It's like, it's insanity. And so I think that as a person, I'm on the ride with everybody else. And as my character, you know, she's taking it all in, you know, with this open heart and this kind of partly squinted eye. And she's she's in it to win it, but she's also tentative because that's her nature. But she's in awe, and she's going for it.
Yeah, well.
Oh, you can tell it's so hard to talk about it, but I'm giving you all I've got.
Right. Well, you know, that was the thing. Like, I know that we're not allowed. That's why I said, what can you tell? You know what I mean? Like, I know you're not allowed. Yeah. What can you? But the interesting thing is to hear, to some degree, that even people who are within the production acknowledge that sometimes in a David Lynch production, things are happening that seem like they're actually possibly not even happening. I relate it to...
It's almost the whole time.
Right. And I relate it to both of the original seasons of Twin Peaks were rife with those kind of things. And then we saw it repopularized again on shows like Lost, where people would watch and you would say to yourself, like, is this even happening? Or are these people delusional and we're just being presented with what they think is happening? You know what I mean? It's like, is this going on at all? So...
Yes. But I think that that's so important. It's almost like getting out of your, you know, like, I always tell people to travel, right? But just with your physical being, like, just go see the world if you can. Like, get out of your bubble, your physical, geographical bubble, but also get out of your mental bubble. Like, let's get, you know, go to some different places. What is happening? Do some questioning. Do some extra thinking that is beyond, you know, kind of what we're, you know, locked into in a daily life. You know, this is so important. And this is, like, maybe one of the most exceptional things that something like television, it can expand. It can expand your awareness. And, like, that, you know, maybe that sounds cliche. I don't know. But, like, just, like, getting into the next level of awareness where, yeah, what is happening? And really just kind of trying on new things, new ways to consider, new ways to approach. And if it means that you have to, like, wonder, is this an illusion? Is this reality? And, by the way, what is reality? And, like, this is great. this is a good thing. And I'm so happy that the television ventures into that territory. I think it's incredibly important. So, yeah, you're touching on all of that, and it's good stuff.
Well, you know, as a member of the LGBT community, we think those things quite often. For example, like, the reason people are stuck in ways of thought is because they so frequently won't expand their way of thinking about things, or they are exposed to so little that it's easy to demonize people who are, you know, transgender, or it's easy to dismiss people who are gay and lesbian, or it's easy to, you know, place stereotypes on people who are of different races or religious backgrounds because you're not exposed to them. You don't see individuals outside of what you see on a daily basis as even necessarily human, or it seems just so beyond you. You know what I mean? So expanding your horizons really opens your eyes.
Oh, it does. It does. And at the end of the day, you know, I see that as also just this awareness of connectedness. I mean, I think that anything like that where we're looking at another sentient, beautiful, perfect human and thinking anything else than this is just an extension of myself, it's just this illusion of isolation and separateness. And I feel like, you know, there's these moments of expansion where you're like, oh, wait a second. I am only doing the deepest disservice to myself to not be open to this, to all of this other, you know, beautiful facets of life. You know, it's like, but I think we're moving towards something that is beautiful and expansive, and I hold this hope for humanity that this love, this expansive love, can push through, because anyone feeling anything other than that is in the illusion of isolation and separation, and the beauty of connection to everything is totally where it's at.
Well, Christabel, thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been a delight, and I'm so glad that we had an opportunity to do it when you feel settled and centered versus when you were on the run. I mean, it was like you mentioned with David how it's important for him that other people feel comfortable and at ease, and I think as an interviewer, that's what I wanted to get across to you when we said, you know, let's just do it when we both are going to be not feeling frazzled or on the run. It changes the total experience, and it comes across to the listeners, it comes across to each of us that we've been able to connect at a moment that's a lot more at ease for both of us.
Absolutely, and I just want to share also that you are a very calming presence, and that I felt very comfortable and cared for in this interview, and I'm so pleased to have had this exchange with you, and I hope that everything is wonderful in your life, and I hope that I get to maybe meet you someday.
I hope so as well. So thank you so much.
Yes, my pleasure, my pleasure. Have a wonderful day, and hello to all of your listeners. And I'm really happy to be a part of this program, and I hope everyone's doing great.
Thank you so much. All right.
Yeah. I'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Everyone, that was singer and actress Christabel. You can catch her on the 18-part series Twin Peaks, returning now to Showtime. It started on May 21st and will continue through the summer. Her upcoming album, We Dissolve, is available for download on June 9th. You can pre-order it now. We'll be back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Poet Almar, and this is Fabulous Episode 68. For all of your personal lubrication needs, please support our sponsoring company, Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants. Swiss Navy provides a wide range of silicone and water-based lubricants. Swiss Navy Premium Lubricants is a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio, so please support them. All right, everybody, that was our interview with Christabel. You can look her up. Her name is C-H-R-Y-S-T-A-B-L... I'm sorry, B-E-L-L. C-H-R-Y-S-T-A-B-E-L-L. She is a star of the new Twin Peaks reboot on Showtime, and her album, We Dissolve, is coming out on June 9th. Check her out. David Lynch, the director of Twin Peaks, directs her music videos and produced, as we discussed, her first album. She's got a new producer on this second album, but they are still definitely very closely linked together. So check that out, and we are so glad that she joined us.
Yep, check her out online, check her out on YouTube, you know.
Do the huge. So, Pearl, what have you got coming up this weekend? What's your big plans for this weekend?
I think this is my last weekend of relaxation before I go back to show stuff. I have my step down in Seattle for Nubian Pride Queen the following week.
So that's June 10th, right?
I think it's June 11th, but that entire weekend I'll be out in Seattle. So,
girl, be careful, bitch. They'll be saying some anti-Islamic shit on a train and stab you up there. Or was that in Portland?
Girl, I don't know. I'm not taking a train.
Good, because some dude stabbed somebody either in Portland or Seattle. I think it was Seattle.
Girl, they don't want to try it with me. I got to tase it.
Oh, come on, tase.
So I'll be getting ready for that. I have to get ready for my step down mostly this week, like preparing my last number and all this other stuff, and getting outfits together with the wonderful Kipper Snacks.
Come on, Kipper Snacks!
I'm really excited for my step down. Actually, we have a few local girls that are coming.
Yes, I heard here. It's going to be that kind of step down.
It's going to be that kind of step down, girl. We've got the fabulous Sable Jones is coming out to compete.
She's going to Seattle?
And Malay Balenciaga is going up to compete.
Oh, come on, Malay and Sable.
And I don't know, for those of you like in the Sacramento area, and I think she now lives close to Seattle, Freedom Rice. Last I talked to her, she was going to compete. And I've seen even more girls on the post that I don't know from Seattle that are competing too. So it's going to be a successful step down from what I hear.
Oh, congratulations on that.
Yes.
Nubian Pride. So, this Friday, I'm going to be doing a corporate gig at 2 Folsom Street for Gap and Old Navy. So, that's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be kicking off their Pride Month festivities. And then, Monday, I will be back down at Google teaching more Drag 101 to my Google gagglers. And that, like, I'm really looking forward to it. I had a really good time on their campus, as you guys heard last week on the podcast. So, I'm excited about that. As well as Sunday will be the Glamazone at the cafe, you know that. And Saturday night, I am going to be doing Mother's Katy Perry tribute. Oh. So it's going to be something fun.
Girl, Katy Perry has been a hot mess lately.
Yeah, Katy Perry's new album is...
I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm not complaining about the music or anything.
The music is a mess. I'm sorry. Right. I don't like it.
And you know what? That is what it is. People are going to like it or they're not going to like it. But girl, the actual artist, Katy Perry, is a mess. There is no disputing that. Like, I don't know if you've seen her performances lately.
I did not see the performance on Saturday Night Live. SNL. I didn't know anybody still... Apparently, lots of people still watch that show, but I don't, and I definitely haven't for many years.
And then I think the Billboard Music Awards, both of those performances were quite embarrassing, kind of hard to watch.
I watched her performance at when she performed Chained to the Rhythm earlier this year, and I mean,
I thought that parts of that performance were really, really fun and really interesting, but most of it I was like, this is boring. She's standing in front of some black box for like 3 minutes.
Girl,
and then it was like actually a house or some shit, and then the house came apart into pieces and there were people and moving it around.
Sounds interesting.
It would have been a cute drag number, mm-hmm. but I thought it was like, for what it was, I didn't think it was that exciting, and I was like, this is a lot. That was a lot of nothing for a something.
Speaking of which, she had a lot of drag queens at the
Saturday Night Live, yes.
And she was supposed to have drag queens for the, I think it was Billboard, the Billboard performance. But Migos, which is the rap group that she performs with in that song Swish Swish.
No, that the Bon Appetit song. They are on Bon Appetit.
I think they're on both.
Oh, maybe they are.
Or maybe it is Bon. Either way, they did not want the drag queens to be on stage with them. So she changed it and she took them out.
Whatever. She should have taken out Migos. Like, you know, what happened?
I think it's just really funny that Migos, it's a black, I think it's a duo. Two black men are willing to perform with this girl who's out here in blackface, but don't want to perform with some drag queens. A mess. That's my thoughts on that. Anyway.
Right now, Katy Perry's album is like, they're doing everything to try to make it take off. Chain to the Rhythm was good. Bon Appetit, I couldn't even get through the whole song one time. I thought it was so bad. The Swish Swish song, which is the third song off that album, has a great beat. It has a cute chorus, but mm-hmm. It's supposed to be a diss track for Taylor Swift. And the disses are so late and tired that, girl, she actually says, you're like an old coupon expired. Bitch. Really? What second grade class was co-writing that shit with you?
I really want you to see this Katy Perry live.
Girl, the primary problem with this album, you guys, is the fact that Kesha sued Dr. Luke, and Dr. Luke and Max Martin were the team that have helped create Katy Perry's sound from the beginning. So Katy Perry, in support of Kesha, went with different producers. Well, the whole album sounds disjointed. She kind of doesn't know who she is. Chained to the Rhythm sounds like Katy Perry. Everything else is a mess.
Sorry. Okay, girl, watch how awkward this gets. I think this is the one.
This is...
Look how awkward she gets.
What the hell is going on here?
Isn't it uncomfortable to watch?
Okay, I'm watching this, you guys, and there's several times where Katy Perry is making... Oh, dear.
It was awful.
Well, the song is awful to begin with. And then if you could only have seen her facial expressions, there are several times when she's like got her eyes all wide and she's like waving her hands. Like, I don't even know what's going on up here, bitch.
Right,
yes.
It's weird.
And she was doing this uncomfortable, painful white girl dance. Oh, yeah. Sweet potato pie.
It was so terrible.
Sweet potato pie, bitch.
I've seen Pollo dance better than that.
Hello, obviously. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that Katy Perry's now got Miley Cyrus's haircut from, like, 3 years ago.
Yes.
Is, like, what the hell's going on?
I guess,
girl, it's all about reinvention, but, bitch, I think it's like, she's like, I'm having a quarter-life crisis. I've lost my identity and my mind and my writing crew. Oh, God, poor thing. By the time this album drops, we're 3 singles into this album. The album hasn't even come out yet. It's practically dead in the water at this point.
Yeah, good luck, girl.
It's the album is like, yeah. And she's getting in Twitter battles with bitches I've never even heard of before.
She's getting in Twitter battles?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who it was. Some person I'd never heard of came for her, and it was like all over the news.
Oh, Ruby Rose.
Who is that?
Ruby Rose is beautiful. She is she is actually part of Taylor Swift's clique. But Ruby Rose, I think, started off as a model, and she's very androgynous, very beautiful.
And
she later became a star on Orange is the New Black.
Right, okay, I do know who she is.
And I think she is one of the faces for one of those perfumes. I can't remember which one it is, but there was a really beautiful commercial with her, all painted, and then she washes off all the makeup, and you can see all her tattoos.
Yes, I do remember that ad. And She's the one who said, keep trying to make...
Fetch happen.
Yeah, because she's...
It's never
going to
happen.
The album's going to be called Witness, and she's like, keep trying to make Fetch happen.
Right.
So, anyway, poor Katy Perry. Something's gone awry with her, and I'm really sad to see it, because I actually love her, and I did not foresee that she would take, like, a weird tumble like this. But then again, as I said, she has replaced her entire production crew. Sometimes it's like you have to stick with what works for you until it doesn't work for you anymore. Like Janet Jackson. Remember Janet Jackson was with the same crew and they were churning out hits and then it started to get a little stale and then she tried to switch it up and bitch never found her footing again.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, she's pumping out babies for Sheiks or whatever the hell he was. And
right. And but now she's about to go back on tour.
Yeah, well, good luck with that.
Yeah.
So,
anyway.
All right, you guys.
Don't forget to check out our sponsors, you guys.
That's right.
Head over to Daddy's Barbershop on 19th and Castro.
Sure thing. And pick up yourself a copy of Left Magazine while you're there, because they definitely carry Left Magazine. Or go find out more about what's happening in Northern California's LGBTQ scene by visiting them at liveleft.com.
Speaking of internet, go ahead to guidetogay.com.
Yes, guidetogay.com. I noticed that we've seen an uptick in our listeners down in Australia. So thank you, Guide to Gay, for helping expose us to those down under as well. Yes.
I live.
And don't forget.
You better live.
I just can't. I won't. So besides.
And last but never least.
Swiss Navy Lubricants.
Yes, honey. You better get your premium Swiss Navy Lubricants for all of your.
For every hole.
Girl, they got one for every hole. They got one for every body part. Every action. You want to fist, they got a cream.
Right.
You want to masturbate, they got a lotion.
Right.
You want to have something stuck up your anus, bitch, they got a premium anal cream for that, too.
Yep.
And if you want it to taste good, they got the kiwi, the chocolate.
The strawberry.
Girl, they got it all. So Swiss Navy Lube for all of your personal sexy time needs. Meanwhile, we will be back next week. As I said, we've already got an interview lined up with Stan Zimmerman, former writer of The Golden Girls, who's got a new Tello Films project coming up, and much more on episode 69. But for now...
Until then, if you guys haven't, don't forget to check out our Twitter and our Facebook page at Party Foul Radio.
That's right. Until next week, I'm Poyet Omar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
We'll see you then.
Girl, you better